Okay.
Rabbi.
Okay. Welcome, everyone.
Rabbi. Yes. Rabbi, question.
Yeah.
At Mincha, we had like 3 minutes before we had Maariv.
Yeah.
So I raised a question that no one was able to answer.
Uh-huh.
This Shabbos, there's a minhag of either baking challah, looking like a key, or putting a key in the challah. What's the derivation?
Yeah, there's many suggestions. One is that actually, if we learn Titus at the beginning, it talks about three keys that control the force of nature, and one of them is Mafteach for Parnassa. So there's a key representing that. There's academic approaches. Some suggest that Christians put keys in their bread as well, and their keys were in the shape of crosses, and we got it from them, and maybe it's Chukas Akum. So, but Yasher Kod, thanks for filling that time between Mincha and Maariv when I was, the reason we're starting late tonight is because I just come back from a Shiva home all the way up in Pound Ridge. So it took me over 20 minutes to drive each way. So anyway, let's get down to it. Not only are we likely a little bit more tired right now, but you'd think, you know, maybe the fate would have it, God would have it, that we'd have a little bit of a lighter Gemara tonight. It turns out that we have a mathematical Gemara tonight. Now, in terms of mathematical Gemaras go, this one is not so bad, actually. It's not like the Yamshel Shlomo Gemara. It's not like we're trying to calculate pi for a circular sukkah, but there's a little bit of cheshbonos. And I got to say, you know, whenever rabbinics and mathematics go together, that is always when I get really scared because I was never a good math student. And so we're going to have to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I teach this in a very clear fashion. Now, what you might notice, I have the Masifta Gemara over here, and it has a chart that we're going to be referencing soon. The Art Scroll I checked also has a chart. And the thing is, I found the table that's in the Masifta to be a little bit more intuitive for my understanding. So I'm not going to make direct reference to that table in Art Scroll, but if you have an Art Scroll, it will be very helpful for you tonight. How so? Let me give you a bird's eye overview of what to expect to see tonight, and then we'll jump into the details. The first part of what we're going to do tonight, we're going to start all the way from the top of Yud Aleph and the base on 11b, in which we're going to continue our discussion about kings who had dominion over the entire world and kings who did not have dominion over the entire world, at least in a conventional sense. Following which, the bulk of what we're going to do today is that there is a prophecy that says within 70 years, God will redeem the Jewish people. And so what we're going to go through is a number of mistaken interpretations where Belshazzar and then many years later, Ahasuerus, both miscalculated the 70 years. They thought the time was up early and they said, oh, the prophecy didn't come to fruition. God didn't keep his end. God didn't redeem the Jewish people. It's time to party. And that's how the Sudas Ahasuerus begins. So we're going to go through a few mistaken calculations, and then we're going to give the correct calculation, and then one last mistaken one. Okay?
Yeah, so, I'm sorry, I just logged on a second late. What page are we on?
We are on Yud Aleph and Mabez 11b.
Oh, I didn't miss that many. Oh, okay.
But only on time. Listen, I missed a week and I didn't realize. Okay, so we're all the way on the top. So what we said previously was that there were three kings who ruled over the entire world. But the thing is, in addition to, let's just see who we had. It was on the previous summit. We had Nebuchadnezzar, we had Ahasuerus, and we had, I think, Achav was the other one. So the question is, all the way at the top, Basuleika, were there no other kings who had dominion over the entire world? But Ika Shlomo. What about King Solomon? The answer is, well, so like Mahuse, his kingship didn't end off as a king. What does that mean? There's another Gemara, I believe it's in Gittin, if memory serves, in which Ashmedai, there's this whole fantastic story about Ashmedai, who's the king of the demons. He dethrones Shlomo HaMelech, and Shlomo becomes his vagabond, and Ashmedai shapeshifts and or almost fully shapeshifts and assumes the identity you know, identity theft is not a new thing. It existed back then as well. He assumes identity is Shlomo HaMelech. And there are two interpretations, two opinions, rather, as to how the story ends. So, Hanich Lamadamar Melech Behediot, this makes sense if Shlomo HaMelech never returned to the throne, that it's a very solemn end to the story. However, Elaman Damar Melech Behediot, Umelech, that Shlomo HaMelech started his career as a king, then he got dethroned, and then he reassumed the throne at the end. Maikla Neymar. So why don't we count him in the list of kings who ruled over the entire world? It ended on a good note. So the answer is, yeah, you know what? Shlomo is so good, he's into a category unto itself. Shlomo Melsa Achrisi Havabe, Moch Al Halayon Ba'al Tachtonim, Shnemar Vayesh Shlomo Al Kisei Hashem. Shlomo HaMelech was so great, he didn't only have dominion over those on earth, he had dominion over metaphysical beings as well, over the Shadim. And because he is just another category into itself, we don't count him with those who only had dominion over man. But what about another king we could have counted? Bahavat Sanacherib. What about Sanacherib? Dechsev. Mi b'chol ha'aretzul sa'il asher tzilas aretz miyadi. You know, all your gods, he says, couldn't save you from me. It sounds like he conquered all the nations. But he wasn't able to conquer Jerusalem. That, I believe, is the story about how overnight the angels came, and then everyone got up in the morning and they saw that the entire encampment of Sanherib had died. They died in their sleep. So there's actually interesting, there's a poem by Lord Byron called The Fall of Sennacherib. So if you ever get a chance, it's a very short poem, and it's about that story, and it's remarkable. Okay. Ha'ika dar yavesh, dechsev dar yavesh malka, katzalcha mamaya umaya v'lishna, didayar b'cha'ara shlamecho nyaska. So he sent a letter to all the different nations and languages, ethnicities, this and that. He sent them, all who lived throughout the land, he sent them a letter saying, you know, guys, you should continue to have much shalom, much hatzlacha. And basically, this indicates again that he has dominion over all of the world. You see, he had dominion over most of the world. He ruled over 120, but not over 127, like we said for Achashverosh. Tchsev. Shaver kadam dar yavesh vehikim amachusa la'achstar benaya mea ve'esrin. So he assigned 120 officers, one per nation, to be his, I don't know what you call it, the governors of these different countries. But it says 120, not 127. And I know what some of you might be thinking. Maybe like one country over time fused with another country. Who says it's always 127? It's an interesting assumption that there was always 127, at least during this time in history. Okay. Final question. Ika Koresh. Koresh we're going to talk about later as well. Koresh, what do we know about Koresh? What's the famous act of benevolence from Koresh? You don't know. Okay, you know what? I'm not going to spoil it for you. We're going to find out at the end of the Gemara today. Dechsiv, Kamar Koresh Mel Paras, Kol Machus Aras Nasan Li Hashem. Koresh says that God gave me all the lands of the world. So why don't we count him among the kings who ruled over the entire world? It says explicitly that he ruled over all the countries. So he did something that politicians tend to do. Hasam Ishabuche Hu Dekamishachi Benavshe. He was patting himself on the back. He was talking about all of his great accomplishments. You know, you ask a politician, how are you doing? What grade do you give yourself? I give myself an A triple plus. So that's what Koresh was saying. And I'm not going to mention any specific people. Okay, that brings us to the end of the section of the Gemara, in which we now understand why all these other kings, while they may have been powerful rulers, they don't quite make the cut, or in Shlomo's case, he makes the cut in with flying colors that he's in a category unto itself. And that ends that piece of the Gemara. Any questions before we get to the meat and potatoes of tonight? Okay. I thought it was rather straightforward. Now, here's what we got to know. You remember Achashverosh has a Suda at the beginning? And all the Yidden go to the Suda. And you see, I don't know. I grew up, this is like very niche. I grew up, when I went to Darkhan, I remember they played the Purim story tape. The Purim story tape is how every, like, yeshivish kid knows. Henry, do you know the tape, or are you just...
I've heard of it.
Yes, this is how every kid knows the Purim story growing up. Like, I asked, like, all of, like, my friends who grew up Modern Orthodox, like, how did you know the Purim story? Like, did you read through the Megillah at that age? So how do you know the story without listening to the Purim tape? So, like, because it's great voice acting, and it's like this whole scene where they go to the Suda and they try forcing them to drink wine there. And okay, I can't do it justice, but it's on YouTube, actually. You could look it up before next part. So, Achashverosh is having a Suda celebrating what? Celebrating that the temple is not being rebuilt. It's been 70 years, and the temple's not being rebuilt. The Jews are not being redeemed. And what does he take out on display?
The Kalim.
Kalim Shoni.
Kalim Shoni, right? So he brings out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Achashverosh was not the first to do this. Who was the first to do that? Belshazzar did that. And what happens to Belshazzar? Belshazzar actually dies in his sleep that very night. Now you're going to ask, wait a minute. Toby.
I'm sorry, could you just clarify? I mean, it wasn't Persia that, you know, that destroyed the temple and sent them into exile.
Very good.
So how did they get it?
Very good. Okay, so for this, Rabbi Osai, if you have a Masifta Gemara, or I think most of you have an Art Scroll Gemara, I don't have the Art Scroll in front of me, but I checked to make sure it's there. There is a table there that gives a full historical overview of what we need to know for tonight.
Yeah. It's on the bottom of 11B2.
Bottom 11B2. So I'm going to summarize what a basic rundown of history during this time, and I'll highlight some of the dates. And that way, when we go through the Gemara momentarily, we'll have some sort of framework to understand what we're talking about. So in the year 3316, Shin Tes Zion, that's when Jehoiakim, who's a Jewish king, comes to power. 2 years later, in 19, that's when Nebuchadnezzar comes to power. He conquers Nineveh. 1 year later, it's important to know, only 1 year, in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, he conquers Jerusalem. And basically, I believe he turns Jehoiakim into a vassal state at that point. However, 3 years later, Jehoiakim stages a rebellion against Nebuchadnezzar. Things don't go so well in general, as we're going to see. That in the year, so in 27, Jehoiakim dies. Jehoiakim is taken out. He becomes king. He's then put into Gullus they're thrown to Gullus. And then in the year when we're in 38, that's when Sikiyahu dies, and that's when the Chorban Beis HaMikdash is. So what's important to note is that even though the destruction of the temple only took place at this point, there were a number of what you might call mini exiles beforehand. Nebuchadnezzar taking over, opening up shop, throwing the king into exile as well. After destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Nebuchadnezzar dies a number of years later, and that's when evil Merodach. Yeah, I love how they, by the way, transliterate his name. Because they call him evil, you know, like Eva, E-V-I-L, but it's just it's not a translation, it's a transliteration of Aleph Vav Yud Lamed. So I always get a kick out of that one. So you have Nebuchadnezzar, you have his son Evil Merodach, and then you have his son is Belshazzar. Okay, Belshazzar is important for us to know. After Belshazzar, we have Daryavish Hamadi. Daryavish Hamadi dies. He goes to Koresh HaParsi, And then from Koresh Parsi, he gives, okay, I'll tell you guys now, he gives Rishus, he gives permission to the Jews to start rebuilding the temple, but then he has second thoughts about it. So he was a could have been Messiah of sorts. And then after he dies, then Ahasuerus finally comes to power. So you can see that even though we're talking about Belshazzar and Ahasuerus, Belshazzar is two kings later from Nebuchadnezzar, and then Ahasuerus is a good number of kings later. So that's basically what we got to know. All right.
But also, Rabbi, now there was a transition then during that time between Babel and Parasumadai. One took over the other.
Right. So the Persian Empire kind of just subsumed all of that. Right. Very good. Very good. Okay. So that's what we got to know. That's what we got to know. And don't worry, you don't have to remember all this offhand. That was just to give you a basic overview. And now the Gemara is going to highlight the specific dates that are important for us. All right. So with that background, you're not being quizzed on it. Don't worry. I don't remember everything without looking at the chart either. And we'll still get through the Gemara. Toby, it looks like you want to say something.
No, but back to my first question. So because Persia conquered the area from Babylon, they then became in possession of the temple things. Yeah. And when Koresh said that they could return and rebuild the temple, they didn't at that point give them back the temple things?
So we're going to see at the end of the Gemara, he kind of is like, anyone who wants to go up and build, like, go have fun. Which he actually gets criticized for, because he kind of just takes a laissez-faire position on building the temple. Mm-hmm. And then it's, I forgot the exact details, and basically a lot of people seem to get angry about this. How dare Jews go on the Temple Mount? And Inkelchel Shachas HaShamash, there's nothing new out there. Okay, let's get to the Gemara. Here we go. By Nimha Din Keshevet Sam Melech. So, again, how do we get into this? We are learning. We are darshaning the psukim in the Megillah. So it's in those days, when the Melech sat down, what's it mean, Kishabes? Uksiv Basibitz is right afterwards, Kishnas Shalosh Lamalcho, in the third year of his reign. So the words Kishabes Amel makes it sound like he just assumed reign, but then it says he's in his third year of his reign. So how do we reconcile the language? Amarava my kishavet la'avish and yasha daito means not like sitting down, but after he got peace of mind, yishav hadas. Amar, what do you say? Belshazzar chashavita. Belshazzar calculated the 70 years, and he miscalculated them. But anah chashvin of lotina. I will calculate it, and I won't make mistakes. So Mai, so what was the miscalculation? The Siv Kilafi Malos Lebabel Shivan Shana Efkodeskan. So the prophecy is that after the Malos Lebabel, after the completion of Bavel. Now, what do we mean by of Bavel? So the assumption at this point is, if you look, I gotta remember what your chart looks like, but in a year.
Yeah, the one in the art scroll is not as detailed, by the way.
We can't hear you.
No?
No, you were too far away from the mic. I need
like a better desk. I'm juggling all those sperms. Okay, so so Belshazzar is counting from 3,390. He considers from the beginning of the Babylonian Empire, meaning from the beginning of the Nebuchadnezzar's reign. That's where he's counting the beginning of the 70 years. So Choshev Arbaim V'chamesh Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar calculated 70 years, 45 years was the reign of the Nebuchadnezzar. The Evil Marodach, and there were 23 years following him of Evil Marodach, the Tarti Day, and then 2 years into Belshazzar's own reign. So what does that get us to? Hashivim, that gets us to 70. So Afik money to be Mikdasha, Vishtanish Fahum, and so he took out the Kalim, the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, and he threw a party. But things did not work out for him. He died the very next day. So, but the Gemara pauses for a moment. This is a mistake. You know what? I'm just going to root it for you guys. I'm going to spoil it just to make things easier. The proper calculation is from the destruction of the temple. Okay? I think that's actually very intuitive. We count the 70 years from the 70 years when we were actually put into Galus, when we our temple was destroyed. But you read the Psukim, one of the Psukim giving the prophecy talks about Bavel. So it's not unreasonable to think that it starts in the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, the Gemara is going to, this is going to be a huge parenthetical right now. We just assume that Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years. But where do we get that? There's nowhere that explicitly tells us Nebuchadnezzar's reign was 45 years. So we're going to have a huge parenthetical right now where the Gemara is going to derive that. So just buckle up for this. I'll let you know when the parenthetical is over. Nebuchadnezzar minolon darboy v'chameshnin malach. So how do we know that he ruled for 45 years? Damar mar, galu b'sheva, galu b'shmona, galu b'shmona esrei, galu b'teisha esrei. So we have a tradition that there was a galus in the seventh year, a galus in the eighth year, a galus in the 18th year, and a galus in the 19th year. Wow, that sounds very vague. Let's make sense of what that means. So here we go.
Rabbi, could you just remind me how many years after Nebuchadnezzar, you know, took over, that was he killed because of the what he did with the Kalim?
So it was actually not Nebuchadnezzar; it was Belshazzar.
Belshazzar, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry.
Three years. There's only 3 years.
Just 3 years. Well, why would it be so little then? Why would he have waited then 70 years?
2 years.
2 years. Huh? 2 years.
Because you had 45, then 23, and then two of Belshazzar. So right. It was in the second year of Belshazzar's reign, because he calculated from the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, two kings before him.
That's
right. Okay. Actually, you know what? We gotta get a whiteboard, and then we could do this at the shul, and then I could put all like all, or smartboard or something, and we could put all the calculations on the board, and it'd be a lot of fun. Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of why Ahasuerus calculated incorrectly. He waited.
So we're not even up to Ahasuerus yet. So you don't have to worry about it. We're still up to Belshazzar. All we know about Ahasuerus is Ahasuerus is very confident. Like he was very snobby and said, "Huh, Belshazzar doesn't know how to do math. I know how to do math." And then Ahasuerus messes up also. Okay. All right. So Gala B'sheva, what do we mean Galus in the seventh year? L'kivash Yehoyakim, 7 years to the conquering of King Yehoyakim, which is known as Galus Yehoyakim, who came afterwards. Shishmona Nebuchadnezzar. So the Galus, the exile of Yehoyakim, was the eighth year of the rule of Nebuchadnezzar. That's what we got to know. And we're going to still elaborate on the details. We're going to go through the full explanation. But that's the key point. Galus Yehoyachin was the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar. Galus B'shmona Esrei. So there was a Galus in the 18th year. L'kivash Yehoyachin. To Yehoyachin, 18 years from Yehoyachin being conquered, Galus Tzidkiyahu. That's when we have what's called the Galus of Tzidkiyahu. Shasrei Nebuchadnezzar. So that is 19 years after the ascent of Nebuchadnezzar. Damar Mar, Shana Rishona, Kivish Ninbe, Shnia Kivish Yehoyakim. During his Shana Rishona, some people during the Shana Rishona, they just hang out with their wife and they play board games and whatnot. And then he had a different Shana Rishona. Okay. For those who got it, they got it. So during his Shana Rishona, he went ahead and he conquered Nineveh. And his second year, Shnia Kivish Yehoyakim, that's when he conquered Yehoyakim, and he turned his sights to the Jews. Uchsiv, Vayehi B'shloshim Shva Shana L'Gos Yehoyakim, Malach Yehuda, B'shneim Asar Chodesh, B'shneim Chavish L'Chodesh, Nasi Yivam Aronach, Malach Bavel, B'shnas Machusa. Right, it's Rosh Yehoyakim. Okay, great. So that was one long passage there. The point from this pasuk is actually the first line there. where it says it was the 37th year from the Gullus of Jehoiachin that Nebuchadnezzar's died, and his reign came to an end. So what do we got here? We got
37
we got
plus eight.
We got eight. We know eight previously because we said that the Gullus of Jehoiachin was 8 years after Nebuchadnezzar's reign. Utlasim Sheva, and we get 37 from this pasuk that says 37 years after Jehoiachin was when Nebuchadnezzar's reign ended. 37 plus 8 is, for those who don't know how to do math, like myself, the Gemara does it for us. What we see from here is that you do basic addition, you get 45 years of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. 8 leading up to the Gullus of Jehoiachin, and then 37 following the Gullus of Jehoiachin. And then, Besin Flas to Evil Merodach, and then we have the next 23 years of the evil guy. And Gemara, we know that from a tradition. Utartini day, and then the 2 years of Belshazzar Hashiv. And so all this was like the back room over here. Like how we got to the conclusion of 70 years. So he actually counted 70 years correctly, meaning the math checks out. The issue is that he just had the wrong starting point for the 70 years. Now, Amar, Ashtavari Sulamifriki. So now he says, certainly, the Jews are not going to be redeemed at this point. Havik might be with Dasha. We just got a gift over the new business coming from. There we go. Okay, found it. Okay. So Avik might be Mikdasham, Bishtamish Bahu, he takes out the Kalim of the Mesa Mikdash and uses them. Hayatuk Amarli Daniel, and this is what Daniel said. Amari Shemai Hisramabta, Lumani De Besa, the Yosokadmecha. So you had this chutzpah that you lauded yourself over God, as it were, and you took out his Kalim. Uchsiv Babalila Kotil Balshatzer Malchakasta. That it was that very night that Belshazzar committed this terrible affront to God that he died in his sleep. Usid the Daryavish Mada Kiba Machusa Kibarshin Shasin. And it says Utartin. And so it says Daryavish Mada. So when he became the king afterwards, he was 62 years old. Very good. So such was the demise of Belshazzar. He did it a little bit too early. Now, Amar, Achashverosh said, Ihu mitta tai ano chashvina v'lo te'ina. Achashverosh, though, was feeling very smug, and he said, Belshazzar doesn't know how to calculate this, but I know what I'm doing. Nisiv l'malchus Babel, does it say in the pasuk that we calculate from the kingdom of Babel, from the beginning of the kingdom of Babel? It just says the word Libavel, said my Libavel, Ligolus Bavel, to the Gullus of Babel. So
we can't hear you.
Okay, sorry, I just have to check the date. Counts from 3,327, which is when Jehoiachin went into Gullus. So he doesn't count from the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. He counts from a few years earlier when Jehoiachin went into Gullus. So since Achashverosh doesn't count as early back as the ascent of Nebuchadnezzar, but he pushes it to the Gullus of Jehoiachin later into Nebuchadnezzar's reign, how of its Siron? So how many years do we have to count for now? Timni, 8. So Choshev Achilufayu, Chodin Belshazzar. So how do we make up that 8? How did Achashverosh add 8 more years? An additional year of Belshazzar, the Chamesh, Didar Yavesh, the Koresh, Utarti Diday, Hashivan. So then there was 5 years which Dar Yavesh and Koresh shared, and then 2 more years of Achashverosh's own reign. Came with the Chazi Demal Hashivan, but Ifro, when he saw that 70 years had passed according to his calculation and Jewish people were not redeemed, Amar, Hashabai Sula Mifriki, he's basically the exact same thing. You know, it's like a fool. You didn't learn from Belshazzar's mistake. So he takes out the Kalim of the base of Mikdash, comes the Satan and he dances among them, Baharagas Vashti, and he kills Vashti. So it's an interesting use of language. You say the devil dances among them, the dance of the devil at their party. So we're actually going to see when we do our shiur, hopefully it's coming Monday night, on flags and shul, Ramosha used this kind of language when he was describing how it shouldn't lead to machlokas. It shouldn't lead. He says, if you can get flags out of the sanctuary of the shul, that's ideal. But if it's going to cause machlokas and discord, and then the next board meeting is going to be a fun one because of it, so it's not worthwhile. It's not worth the machlokas. So he uses this similar kind of metaphor that the Satan is dancing among us, meaning the Satan, you know, it's like it reminds me of, what was that, an American Pie song? I saw Satan laughing with delight the day the music died. So it's that kind of imagery that's invoked there. I forgot who explains it this way, but one of the explanations for dancing is because dancing is something that arouses sexual impropriety. And so actually that's what was happening, was Ahasuerus called Vashti out to come out nude, and then she refused, and then Vashti got killed. Now you might be wondering, wait a minute, if Belshazzar was the one who sinned and he got killed, if Ahasuerus did the same thing, why did Vashti die? Why did Ahasuerus die? And there's another explanation that's given, but one that I got a kick out of was, one explanation was given was Ishto Kigufo, that his wife shares.
She was also Belshazzar's daughter, so it was the...
You're saying so it kind of runs in the family.
Yeah.
Right. I like that. So she was his daughter, and that's kind of how Ahasuerus became the king. It's ironic. He became the king because of Vashti, but then he kills Vashti, and he's still the king anyway. Okay, very good. So the question the Gemara asks is Vashaber Chashiv. So wait, what was wrong with Ahasuerus's calculation? So the Gemara answers, now this is the actual approach, this is the correct one. So he is mistaken because he was supposed to count from the destruction of Jerusalem. So in the end of the day, how many years we have to count for when we deduct, what's the difference of years that elapsed from the galus of Jehoiachin to the destruction of the temple? 14 years. So, Iyakama Malachar Besar, and our base of the day, Iboyle, actually, wait, there was a difference. Sorry, Chadesar, 11 years. My mistake. 11 years. So, Iyakama our Besar, by our base of the day, Iboyle, the base of Mekdash, Salamaksir, but then Mikalta of Disa, base of law, de Yerushalayim. So, the question is as follows. If we follow the calculation that 70 years elapsed from destruction of our temple, then actually in the 14th year of Ahasuerus's rule, that's when the Jewish people should have been redeemed. But why did we have to wait until the next king, until the continuation of Pasuk is, Ashnath Tartan Lamahistar Yavishmel Paras, until the second year of Daryavish, the king of the Persians? It really should have just finished in the 14th year if we follow this calculation. Amarava, Shnaim, Mukutalis Havu. We had cut up years because it wasn't like the one king finished his tenure on December 31st and then the next one continued on January 1st. But these things just happen, someone dies or someone's kingdom gets taken over, and these could happen any day of the year. So the issue was that Ahasuerus assumed that if one king died, another king took over, he considered them to be two separate years, when in fact they only counted for one year. There was one more year for Bavel, came and he completed that missing year in the calculation. So that's how we get to the second year of Daryavish, because you can't consider the half years to be considered full years. That was a mistake that Ahasuerus made in this calculation as well. Okay. There was one other person who made a mistake, and this one's the most surprising one, because you would think these non-Jewish kings, Belshazzar, Ahasuerus, okay, what do they know? But would you think Daniel also wouldn't know how to calculate it? He was pretty close. Amar Rava, Af Daniel taught b'hai chushpan, d'chsip, b'shnas achas l'malcho, ani Daniel b'nosi b'sfarim, mitgar b'nosi m'chlal d'tah. So the implication is that from this pasuk, it would seem to suggest that Daniel also misinterpreted where we start the calculations. So again, let's just review very briefly what the four different interpretations, calculations are. Word about Belshazzar, you count from the beginning of the Buchanetzar's reign. According to Daniel, which we're going to see right now, you start counting from 1 year later when he conquers Yoyakim. Then he's the closest one. Ahasuerus says that you count from the Golus of Yehoyakim. And then Chazal, our interpretation is that you count from the destruction of the temple. So Daniel was actually almost in the same boat as Belshazzar's calculation. Okay, so end of that. Nonetheless, if you recall, all the way at the beginning of this section of the Gemara, we cited two psukim, and one of them we didn't seem to really focus on too much. Mikol makom kashu proya dadi, ksev melos lebavel, uksev lecharvus Yerushalayim. We have two contradictory psukim. One pasuk says we count based on Bavel. That's what got Belshazzar thinking you start from the Buchanetzar. The other pasuk says from the destruction of Yerushalayim. So that's what we base it on. But how can we just ignore that one pasuk tells us to calculate it from the kingdom of Bavel? So Amarava Lifkida Ba'alma. It's referring to there was a mini redemption that started up that didn't quite work out. What does that refer to? By the Siv, Ko Amar Ko Resh Mel Paras, Ko Mam Lachas Aris Nasli Hashem Elokei Hashemayim, Fu Pakar Eli Livnos Lo Bais Yerushalayim. So Koresh gave the go-ahead. He gave the green light to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. Now, he kind of sort of retracted on that, and things had to wait many years later until Daryavish HaParsi came along and gave permission to rebuild the temple. So Darshan Akbar Rav Hista Mayasiv Komar Shem Mishikal Koresh Asher Sakti Yemenu. So it sounds like from the Pasuk that Koresh is being referred to as the Messiah of God. The Koresh Mashiach was Koresh considered the Mashiach? He didn't bring about a redemption for us. Well, Amar Lekosh Baruch Hu LeMashiach. Rather, God said to the Messiah, Koma Ani Lecha Al Koresh. I am crying for you on account of Koresh. Ania Marti, who give that basi kavis Gilyosi, I said that he'll come and rebuild my house, and he'll bring back those who are in exile. For who Amar, wants to come out and rebuild the temple. So he was there, he took a laissez-faire position on it. He could have been the one who could spearhead and could have led the vanguard and really took a proactive role in rebuilding the temple. Instead, he's like, I'll give the Jews a building permit and let them make of it what they will. And things didn't work out until many years later. So how does it answer our question? There was a 70-year count from Malchus Bavel until Koresh HaParsi came along and issued the green light to start rebuilding the temple. But then 70 years from destruction of the temple was actually when our redemption truly began. Okay. And that brings me
to the end. How can you criticize a non-Jew for not building the temple? I mean, God was very particular about who could build his temple. David HaMelech couldn't build his temple. So how could any non-Jew be contemplated to be the actual? I mean, it seemed to me that Cyrus did everything that he could do. I can't imagine.
Right. Well,
I don't get it.
On the one hand, I do hear the sympathies. Like, if I was in charge of a country and then a bunch of Christians wanted to build a church, the nicest thing I could do is let them build their church. I wouldn't really play a role in actually building it for them. But it seems that Koresh, in his own words, actually says that I have been informed by God. I've been appointed by God to rebuild the temple. And he was aware of that. And yet he didn't actually, he was charged to rebuild the temple. But he did not rebuild the temple. He just allowed others to do the
job. So we think that Cyrus had Nebuah?
I forgot precisely how it is communicated to him. Any Tanakh people here who could fill us in on that? Okay. I forgot precisely how that's communicated to him. But yeah, that's a good question, Toby. All right. The hour is late, Rabosai. I don't want to hold you guys on here any longer. I myself am nearly falling asleep. Hence, starting next week, we will be learning at 7 p.m. Both my evening shiur, Monday and Thursday, God willing, will meet at 7 p.m., conclude prior to Mincha. And I think we're going to keep it basically at 7 p.m. Maybe we'll move it to 7:15 if it gets really late, but I think we're going to keep it at 7 p.m. throughout the, at least into midway into the summer. I think that makes sense, modern-wise, right? All right. Shkoach, everyone. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and thank you for your flexibility.
Thank you.
Enjoy your challahs with the keys there, Erwin.
All right.
Don't swallow it.
There you go.
Shabbos, everybody.
Good job.